So this is episode 6 so far. We've made it this far. And I have another guest today. Let me introduce comedian, writer, radio broadcasting guy, author, actor. But I think generally, I think of you as a performance artist. And
a performance artist?
Yes. Wow. It's Mr. Michael Veach. Hello.
I'm good. Hello, mate. Shane, gee. a performance artist. Now, I should apply for a Churchill Fellowship or something.
Oh, you could. You could.
Put some toasters on my head or something, and $50,000 and 6 months all expenses paid to Berlin.
Oh, if you can get it, do it.
Yeah. Hope so.
Looking back at things you've done, I see, you know, it's performance, and especially with the stuff you've just done, what you're doing with Flack now, it's a performance. There's a lot of, you don't just go out there and just read it off a thing.
I've performed. I've had this obsession with old blokes that flew planes in World War II and getting their stories, and so I got a book deal a few years ago because a friend of mine was writing the biography of Bud Tingle.
I know Bud Tingle.
Yeah, well, he's no longer with us.
Well, not personally, but he used to do a lot of stuff on The Late Show, I remember.
He did, yeah. He was just a lovely man. And he, my journalist friend Peter Wilmoth was doing an article on him. Doing his biography. And when he got to his war chapter, because he was a pilot in World War II, he used to ring me and say, oh, he's talking about a Spitfire Mark 8 and a 20mm this and that, and I don't know what he means. So I would explain it, and the more I explained, I thought, I should do my own bloody book. So he said, yeah, you should. So I just rang his publisher and said, look, I've got this idea for a book. It just came to me today. What if I just go out and track down a few old guys that flew in the war and have never told their stories, and I record their stories? I said, yeah, go for it. So it was embarrassingly easy, and that became the first book, Flack.
Yeah.
And then I got nicked by another publisher.
Ah.
Did another one called Fly. Yeah. And I'm about to release the third one called Heroes of the Skies. And that comes out on the 30th of this month.
30th of, what are we, July?
July, yeah. It comes out in a few weeks. I'm just holding the first copy of it in my hot little hand.
Oh, you've got it already.
Yeah, the advanced copies. I printed last week and they've sort of given me a few, which has been nice.
I remember, this is probably going back maybe 10 years. I remember somebody, I can't remember who it was, they were going around then, like 10, 15 years ago, trying to talk to these guys and get the stories out of them, because as you know, they don't talk.
They know if you know what to say. Oh, yeah. I wonder who that was. Was there someone going out and getting pilot stories?
Not specifically pilots, but guys from the war. And,
I remember thinking,
what a great idea, because once they're gone, they're gone. And if
I know, I know.
Get those stories, that's it.
And so many times I realize, this guy hasn't actually spoken about this to anyone.
Yeah.
And it becomes a quite a sense of responsibility, because you're, and it's not just a voyeuristic sort of thing. You're actually, you know, you realize you're sort of the receptacle of these extraordinary memories of that these people have had. So, but it was complete labor of love. And then I said, I'll do a stage show on it. So what I'm doing, I'm touring at the moment with a show that's being I'm initially doing a regional tour, and we did the first part of it early in the year. And we went through Queensland and parts of New South Wales. And in a month or so, we start in Victoria, Tasmania, and some of South Australia. It's called Flack, and it's coming to all sorts of places.
Are you coming to Sydney, or you've been to Sydney?
I haven't
got that far.
Well, the big city tours will be starting to be put together over the next few months. But this is sort of an initial regional tour, just to sort of test it, and the reaction's been very, very good. And so I just basically play five old blokes, one after the other, telling a story with a bit of my slightly younger self weaved in the middle to give it some kind of context. And it's nice. It's nice being in a one-man show. You don't have to worry about any other bloody actors.
No one else, yeah. If we can go back a bit in time, you went to University of Melbourne.
I did.
As did so many comedians who were – you know, huge now. Well, not huge, but big in comedy.
Fat.
And been
you
for
mean
a long
fat.
Time.
Huge
possibly.
As in fat. Overweight.
Age-wise, possibly.
Lazy. Slovenly. Good for nothing. Absolutely. No, I can certainly associate myself with that.
Yeah. But you, as opposed to a lot of them who studied law for some reason and ended
up
comedians,
I know.
You studied the arts.
Yeah, I just did sort of history and stuff like that. And I don't think it matters what you study. I mean, it's who you hang out with, really. That's what does it, you know, and what your influences are. And I was never particularly academically gifted or anything. I was always lazy as at school, and just a smart ass, basically. And, you know, all those things my parents said about, if you work harder, you might be able to. I just wish, oh, that was so right. They were so right. If only I did listen to what the teacher said, I just.
But no.
I did try it, math, because I said, I wish I understood maths now, because it's actually quite beautiful. And I kind of, God, there's this whole beautiful language to mathematics and this aesthetic to maths that I just don't understand, because I was sort of, oh, well, it's not what I do. And that, and the parents said, well, just give it a go. But I wouldn't. And now they're right.
I think that's one
of the things of aging, isn't it? Oh, God.
If only.
If only.
Yeah, no, I know some people, they do like drafting and engineering, and that's like just a whole other world that I know nothing about. And it is a beautiful thing if you know what you're
doing.
It is,
yeah.
At.
Yeah, yes.
Otherwise, it's just a bunch of stuff.
But they probably think, oh, I wish I'd done comedy, or wish I'd done plays and blah, blah. So,
why aren't I on television now?
Yeah, we're a miserable bunch, aren't we, honestly? Grass is always fucking greener.
It is. That's everyone all the time. That's never going to change.
Yeah.
But then, so you just hung out with guys at the uni.
Well, there's a bunch of us, and I got involved with the university reviews.
Yeah.
Melbourne had a tradition of them doing them. There were two a year. There was the law review, which was sort of straight up, you know, well-written sketches and, you know, two people walk into an office and start saying funny things. And then there was the Archie Review, which was done by the architecture students. And that was wild. That was because they were more visual and creative. And it was you know, and it was sort of like watching a Fellini thing on stage. You go, what the fuck is this about? I don't know what's going on, but it's great. I wish I could. So we then cobbled together a bright young spark cobbled together. Well, I actually revived the tradition of the Melbourne University Review, which was a sort of a combination of both.
Yeah.
And he nixed people from the Archie side and some from the Laura side and put them together. And we began to just tour it at a sort of venues. He sort of tried to make it a going commercial concern, and it kind of worked. And we had a big season in Melbourne, and then Perth. We went to Perth and a few other places. Then the ABC happened to sort of just stop by one night because they were looking for a new show. Because that's when the ABC actually made a television, as opposed to what they do now. They were looking for a show to complement two other locally produced comedy shows, being one of the Max Gillies shows in the 1980s. We're talking, we're going back a bit now. And also a show called Australia or Standing In It.
Yeah. It was Gillies Report. Was that the one?
Well, there was the Gillies Report, and then there was the Gillies Republic.
Ah.
It was called. That was the second series. And then there was Australia or Standing In It with Steve Blackburn and, you know, doing Tim and Debbie and Rod Quantock, which I still actually think is one of the best Australian comedy shows that's ever been made.
That was just a bit before my time, but I was looking on
YouTube
the other day, and there's a whole like hour and a half best of on YouTube of that, so I watched the whole thing. It was great.
Look, and Rod Quantock is around still, and he's doing stuff, but there was something genuinely subversive about Australia Standing In It.
Mm.
And, you know, it was often rough, it was often not polished, but the writing was really good and the sentiment was really good too. And I don't think that's been replicated much over the years.
And the other thing I noticed with that as well is that, I mean, there's a lot of political satire, but the sting that was in it, there's nothing like that now.
There is nothing
that. As harsh, which is sad.
It is a bit, because, God, don't we need it?
Oh,
know?
Now, well, more than ever.
Absolutely crying out for it, but there's nothing
much
about. I'm actually involved in another, in a sketch comedy series at the moment called Open Slather, which is on Foxtel, but, you know, they're not really going for much of the politics side of it, which is, you know, the producer's decision, and there you go, and nothing much you can do about it. But that really was a kind of a heyday then, and it's a sad, I mean, and it sort of speaks to this sort of more conservative times, or the more apolitical times, and which is, I think, explains.
Ooh, we get a bit of wind there.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm actually, my hobby's bird watching. So,
okay.
So I'm actually walking out on a this weird kind of, I'm in Geelong. For people who know Geelong, it's sort of this sort of strange, you know, Geelong is one of the biggest regional cities in Australia, but it's sort of down the bottom of Port Phillip Bay, and there are all these weird, strange inlets, and the sun never shines here. It like today, it's even in summer, it's perpetually overcast, and the sea is kind of a weird slate grey, and you can imagine, you know, the place of, you know, awful crimes having been committed here in about 1850 or something like that, and lots of sort of get out of the minutes. Yes, this must be making for a great podcast. I'll just describe what's happening. I'm walking past a derelict old pier. There are some bits of fishing floats and some slimy grey matter that's just sort of washed up, and it's probably radioactive or carcinogenic or it could be something decomposing. I'm not quite sure, but
it's a visual podcast.
Windless safety of the car. And nearly there. Oh, it was still as anything a couple of a sec ago. Now it's all sort of blown up again. I'll get back in. Dropping my Mikey card everywhere. Well done. Oh, you're getting the whole tour here. You'll
it's great.
Hang on, nearly there. And we're back.
Back in the car, okay.
Back in the car, yes. Yeah, so where were we? Reminiscing about the golden age of Australian...
Just at
comedy,
the start
blah, blah, blah. Of
D Generation, and you got involved with those guys.
Yes, yes, and so that's right. A couple of ABC producers came and saw us one night and said, "Oh, would you be interested in doing a pilot for a sketch show?" And we went, "Oh, yeah, I guess." So we went in there, and did a pilot and got the series, and that became the D Generation, and we did two series of those. The second series has never been repeated. And it's never been put onto DVD.
Someone's got copies of it, though.
Well, we don't know. We don't know how. We don't know in what format.
Because they have gone back and like just erased a lot of VHS tapes years ago. So they, who knows?
Yeah, they had to say because the tapes are expensive. That's why Auntie Jack's been wiped, because they had to save the fucking magnetic tapes. There's a story of
Insane.
Trevor. He was a director of Fast Forward, and before he was Fast Forward, he directed Countdown, and he literally had to grab a bunch of these tapes of, you know, the only tapes of episodes of Countdown, and hide them in a toilet in the ABC because the money miners are coming around saying, well, we need to get the tapes back to reuse them again. So, well, you can't. This is, you know, oh, no, we've got to use the tapes. We've got to use them for a fucking Bellbird or something, I don't know, or So What, or Gardening Fucking Australia.
Yeah.
Hundreds of hours were just lost. It's just completely crazy. But anyway.
You did two series of D-Gen, but the thing I've always been interested in is in how did the split come about, how, you know, you guys went over there and then Rob and everyone went over there and did Working Dog, and then what was that split? How did that happen? Who decided
this type
or that type of comedy?
Oh, no, it wasn't so much that. Because we were doing radio. We're doing commercial radio. We've been doing it for a few years, and I just couldn't bear the hours anymore. I just couldn't bear getting up at 5 in the morning. I hated it. And when the tele gig came, we did a couple of specials for Channel 7. And there's a famous degenocide where Tony Martin dubbed over an old episode of Homicide, and that's brilliant. Four of them. But at the end of it, Channel 7 wanted to fuse us with the people that had done a show called The 11th Hour.
It
was on at 11 p.m. on Friday nights or something. And people like Steve Vizard and...
Mark Mitchell, Ian McFadden.
Mark was in it, and Ian was in it. And then they went to make...
Comedy Company.
Comedy Company.
And then Steve thought, hang on, I can do this myself.
Yes.
Let's make a show.
I'll have to ask him about what the timeline was. And I'm not quite sure why he didn't go into Comedy Company. But maybe it was just a timing thing. But well, anyway, the channel said, what I'll do, I'll get... you D-Gen guys to work with this Steve Vizard guy, and the other guys said, no, thank you. And I said, oh, it doesn't sound too bad an idea. So I went with them, and they said, well, you know, we'd rather keep doing our own show. So that's how it happened, and I was very happy to work with some different people. And, they're a bit insular, the D-Gen. I mean, they're brilliant, really, the most brilliantly talented people I've ever worked with. But they're a bit of a closed shop, and I kind of didn't really want it to be a closed shop. I look quite working with other people, but
yeah.
So
I have noticed they have started bringing in other people. Like in Utopia, there were some new people they brought in. Like, well, Celia Piccola was in there, and they've brought in a few new people. Whereas before, it was always just them.
Yes,
and
yes,
not usually anyone else.
Yeah, yeah. They certainly have a unique place in Australian performance history. That's for sure. Absolutely.
As do you. Fast forward. Come on.
Oh yes. I mean, we were not. You know. I always say the DJing, and particularly a lot of the late show stuff. I mean, that was, you know, pretty, you know, it was, I used to envy, oh God, I wish we were doing that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm very proud to have worked with him in the early days. But yeah, look, and I just really enjoyed working with people like Ted and Magda and, Margaret and,
I noticed that a lot of skits, you always end up with Magda, a lot of skits.
Yeah, we always work well together.
Yeah, exactly.
Magda, you know, when she's not bursting out laughing and manages to learn her fucking lines, she's absolutely brilliant. You know? I mean, she's fabulous, Magda. She really is a unique proposition, Magda. I mean, she's an extraordinary woman. She's highly, highly, highly intelligent. She's incredibly well read. She's, you know, she's very, very clever. And is very culturally astute, and she's just really good company. And she's very, you know, she's a very highly self-educated person. she's written a book. She's about to release a book about her father, who was Polish. That's where she gets the name from.
Yeah,
and he was in the Warsaw Uprising as a fighter, and this story is about her uncovering her late father's past, and it's a. I've only read the introduction. It's just beautiful. She's just a beautiful writer.
So that's going to be a big one. To come on a podcast and talk about it.
Yeah. I'll You can only try.
That's right. But see, I was looking back at, like, there's a bunch of full episodes of Fast Forward, and I was watching them, and I'm just like, this would never get made today. I mean,
no, some looking, and
there was
so much stuff.
And you're just like, no, not a chance. I mean, there was blackface stuff. There were like
blackface stuff,
implied rape, domestic violence, and
I know.
And I was watching that, and I'm like, as funny as I find this, it's sad that it would never see the light of day today.
Well, you couldn't do the airline stewards now.
Oh, not even that, no.
But I wouldn't really want to do the airline stewards now. And look, I don't mind how things change. That doesn't mean you can't do stuff. Yeah, but yeah, you know, you're right. You would think twice about doing a lot of the stuff that we did. And, but then again, 10 years before that, they were probably making jokes about Aboriginal people sort of, and getting away with that. So, and we wouldn't have done that in our time either. So look, things change and sensibilities change and you just have to go with it, really, I suppose. What else can you do? Yeah, sometimes it's a bit enervating and a bit disappointing because putting the knobs on satire like that kind of almost defeats the purpose of doing it. But
I don't know. I come from that group of people that think there really shouldn't be any limits. It's
common. Nothing is sacred. Nothing is sacred.
That's what it should be.
Yeah,
like almost the total opposite, where everything is sacred. You can't say anything. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I tend to agree. There are far more, you know, there's far more second guessing of sensibilities and things now. Yeah. And look, it just sort of speaks to the general conservatism of the age, I think.
I just don't know where it came from, though. It's crazy.
It's hard to know, isn't it? Well, why
and
the
it's,
hell is
it's just been creeping and creeping and creeping up.
Yeah, well, we have primordial Neanderthal neoconservative morons running the country that were elected by the Australian people. You know, I mean, we have people like Erica Betts, one of the greatest minds of the 18th century, is the minister for fucking whatever he is. I mean, don't get me started. But this is why. And these people are there's none of the kind of there's nothing savvy or smart about any of that. So they just underline. I mean, we're the last. We are an international joke over this gay marriage.
When America's done that before us, that's pretty bad.
Hello, Ireland.
That is pretty bad. Ireland.
Ireland. They're Roman. It's a Roman Catholic. yep. almost monotheistic country.
It's pretty bad.
It beats France. France did it. Oh, it beggars belief. And here we are, puddling away at the arse end of the world. You know, you can see why Keating got up, you know, got his back. Oh, you think you fucking want to make me stay here at the arse end of the world?
Yeah, he could see the future then.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
He was looking forward.
Come back, Paul, all is forgiven. But look, you know, as bleak as that sounds, I know these things are cyclical too. And there's a green movement that I'm very fond of that, you know, is creeping up there. It's creeping up there. You know, I'm kind of, I mean, in a way we're more conservative, but in a way we're less conservative too, or we're less, I mean, there are things happening now that, all right, the alternative is the way of thinking is that sure, during those times you could get away with murder. But if you listen to what was happening at those times at the Royal Commission into child abuse, you go, Jesus Christ, that's what was happening back then and people were getting away with it. So that those sort of things change too.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There were things then you couldn't do and there were things you could do and it's the same now.
Yeah.
But they're totally different things. That's the strange thing about it.
Yes. Oh. It is a very...
But
cyclical time
good.
To lose.
Because yeah, if that means this PC stuff can just like go away eventually, I'll be very happy with that.
Well, the thing is, you don't want all of it to go away because you won't have
There's some good stuff.
Yeah.
There's some good parts to it, but there's some impacts in areas which I just do not like. Like comedy being the main one.
Comedy being the main one. Yeah. It's true. It is kind of true.
So after Fast Forward, Full Frontal. Now, you only did that year?
Only a little bit.
You were in and out the first year or something?
Yes, I was. It was really just a bit of contractual obligation with Full Frontal. It kind of felt like, oh, this is somebody else's show. And that's where Glenn Robbins and I did some nice stuff. I loved working with Glenn. It's always been a great privilege to work with Glenn. And
I really liked his show Out of the Question, which only did 6 or 10 episodes or something a few years ago. I really liked that show.
You know, I didn't even see it.
Oh, that's how much you love him. No, it was just like panel show, but I really liked it. But it didn't.
Yeah,
it came back.
So Glenn, who are we talking?
Yeah. God.
Oh no, not Glenn Robbins. I mean, Glenn Ridge. Yeah, Glenn Ridge, one of the loveliest guys.
Yeah.
When I did Sail with Glenn Ridge, I just felt I had arrived.
That was it. That was the peak, the pinnacle.
No, Glenn Robbins, he's a hack. He's a complete hack.
I've seen Glenn.
I wouldn't give him the time of day.
Glenn's always sort of been in and out of the various groups of comedians I've noticed.
He's very cautious, Glenn. He's very cautious. He doesn't.
I can see.
He doesn't throw him. See, he's not a risk taker. He doesn't throw himself into things very, very much. But
because he's been in just about everything. I mean, he's done stuff with like he did Russell Coit with the D-Gen guys.
Yeah.
He did Comedy Company, which was that Channel 10 group, and then he did Fast Forward. He's sort of been a bit in everywhere, but
he's
everyone else is sort of stuck in their little
complete.
Groups.
Complete slut.
Wherever
he'll
there's a job,
yes to everything. He just is not discriminating. He's just embarrassing himself. For God's sake, I wish he'd stop.
And you, what else did you do? You were on Jamoan's show.
Oh, was
I? Love Jamoan. You're in a bit of that.
Jamoan told me one interesting thing, which the only thing I remember about being on Jamoan's show is when he said to me his theory of how the troubles in Northern Ireland ended. Rave culture.
Oh, yeah.
All these kids going to a warehouse, eeing off their face, girls and boys, Protestant and Catholic, you know, all dancing around and all looking at each other going, what the fuck are we fighting? What the fuck are we trying to kill each other for? He said, it's a fascinating idea. He said, well, this is ridiculous. What are we so cross with each other for? Who gives a shit?
That's totally.
And he reckons that was the ideological beginning of the end of the Northern Ireland Troubles.
Because
what a great
theory.
Once
all the older people have, like, you know, given up, it's only the
young
people left.
Yeah.
And if they're all like, oh, peace and love, man, then Yeah, it's over.
Yep, that's
Maybe that's a good theory.
I hope it's true. Oh, yeah, look, I did a whole hodgepodge of things. But then I started writing, and I did a column. I did various writing columns. I was, believe it or not, a theatre critic for three newspapers, the Age Australian
the
and
Age,
the Herald
yeah.
Sun for a while. I had to stop doing that because I was starting to pull my punches. I said, this is a shit show, but I just can't write that. I just can't. They're too nice of people, but their show's awful. So I stopped doing it. That's the reason. They don't want me to keep going, but I just can't. I don't care enough about it. You know,
yeah.
I can blow their money, but I'm not going to offend these poor, young, nice tries.
I'm getting more like that. I'm getting more like that. Like when we used to do all the album reviews, I've noticed, you know, the last few albums that we reviewed, I just don't like anything. And I just, and then I just gave up. I'm like, we can't do this anymore. I just hate everything now. So let's just not do it anymore.
Yeah, you get to that. Oh, and then I did all sorts of things.
You did radio in Tasmania for a while.
Yes, I was broad. Well, I actually brought, then I had a few years on Double TFM. I was doing comedy and sketches, just by myself, basically, one of the other ARN, Australian Radio Network, one of their big Melbourne stations down here. And then a few years ago, and then I did. Then I hosted hosted the arts show. Sunday Arts, which I enjoyed immensely. And here's a funny story. Okay. Now, talking about Fast Forward, one of the characters I did regularly on Fast Forward was Peter Ross, hosting Sunday Arts, yes. Now, when it came to me doing the ABC show years later, I got a phone call from saying, oh, do you want to come? They're auditioning people to host Sunday Arts, and I'd like you to do it. And I thought I was having my leg pulled. I said, oh, bullshit. I'll fuck off. No, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. They want you to come in and test for the host of Sunday Arts.
What?
I said, okay. So I came in and got it.
Of course.
Then I had this meeting with the then executive producer, who was this wonderful old ABC stuff shirt, and he was absolutely marvellous. And I soon realised he had no idea that, A, that I'd satirised the very role that I was about to do. I was about to sign the contract to do in real life. He had no idea that there was a show called Fast Forward, and probably had no idea that there was anything called commercial television anyway.
Yes.
And someone had to explain to him, said, you realise 25, well, no, a little bit less than that then, 15 or whatever years ago. He did this and showed him a tape, and he was aghast. And wanted to cancel a contract, but he couldn't. And then he retired anyway. But it was so funny. I think I might hold a world record for being in the unique situation of actually doing the same piece of satire, the same job in satire and in real life.
And in real life.
I think
there can't be too many.
Unit. There can't be. No, there can't be. But
wow.
but that was fun. I enjoyed doing that.
So when you were in Tasmania, I'm assuming that's when you got the idea for this book about the lost islands, the forgotten islands.
That's right. Ironically enough, no. This is a story that had been told to me as a kid.
Oh.
And when I got a two-book deal with Penguin, they said, I've got another airplane book. What's your second one? I said, well, I've always wanted to do a story about the islands of Bass Strait because I was told a really weird story about them as a kid, and I've always been fascinated by them. So they said, go for it. So I, you know, spent time going through these weird, windswept, very hard to get to little places in this very one of Australia's most peculiar stretches of water, because Bass Strait, because you know it's the water between Tassie and the mainland.
Yeah.
Well, the reason it's weird is because it's very shallow, and so either side of it, because in the Ice Age it was a promontory, you could walk there. So the original people got there, and so when the seas rose, it cut it off. But it's still only like 60, 70 metres deep.
Ah.
And on either side of it, you have the continental shelf dropping off to 5 kilometres. So there's this enormous rush of water that confounds all the yachties because nothing makes sense. All the tides are wrong and it's weird and it's very blustery. And yachties from up north, you know, Sydney and that, hate Bass Strait because nothing works. And that's why the Sydney to Hobart is really, apart from, you know, things like the Volvo, it's the toughest yacht race in the world.
Oh.
It's far more tougher than anything like Fastnet or any of those other ones.
You've really got to know what you're doing going down there.
You really have to know what you're doing. And things like 98 happen where they gets clobbered and six people get killed, you know. But I always wanted to explore them, and so I was actually down in Tassie, down in Hobart, doing a few interviews with some people that had been on there on them. And then I came back to Melbourne, and then a week later they cancelled the Sunday Art Show. And so
it's time to write that book.
Well, I'd already done the research for it, and I'd spent a few days in Hobart, and I really liked it down there. And they said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I'd like to do radio. And they said, well, okay, we'll talk to the head of radio. So I had lunch with the head of radio. He said, well, the only spots I've got coming up are in places like Bathurst or Orange, or one was in South Australia. I said, oh, any capitals? They said, well, Hobart. I said, my God, I've just been there. I really liked it. I'll have Hobart. So I went down to do the afternoon shift in Hobart and lived there for 3 years and did three different shifts there, and I really liked it.
I've never been to Tasmania. I've always wanted to go.
Oh, my God,
People say it's like England. It's like green rolling hills, but it's also a bit like New Zealand
Hobart.
As well.
It is. It's all that. And it's a bit like Sydney Harbour, but it's with, you know, a fraction of the population. And Mona, I mean,
I've got to get
Mona that is just this. It's just extraordinary. It's just this absolute world-class modern art, a private modern art museum that's completely changed the place. I mean, it's a very cool little place, Hobart. It's really, really great.
I'll get there.
Really should go there, and it's just beautiful. People go there and go, where the hell have I been? Where the hell has this place been all my life?
I could, mate, if I like it there, I could just stay there. Just stay there forever.
Well,
why not?
Yeah, be there about now. It gets very cold.
Oh, yeah. Visit it.
And very dark very quickly. But, you know, it's still better weather than Melbourne.
But if you don't need to get up and go to work, that's fine.
Yes, well,
who cares
actually,
if it's still dark at 8:30
It's funny because, you know, when all the Andy Muirhead business happened, about when Andy Muirhead got, with child images and all that ghastly business, I took over his shift because he was doing breakfast and I was doing afternoons, and so he was suddenly out of the picture in no uncertain terms. And they said, we need someone to do breakfast. So I went from the cushiest shift on the state radio, which is afternoons, and you get up at 10 in the morning and wander in, and it's 2 hours and you piss off home, and to the absolute toughest one, which is getting up at 4:30 a.m. in the middle of a Tasmanian winter, cycling to work and being on air at 5:30.
That's tough. I wouldn't be doing that.
No, but it's still it's a beautiful place. I do miss radio, actually, yeah.
Any plans to go back to radio?
If someone offers? Oh, yes. Look, the ABC are an odd lot. You sort of, I did leave to come back and get the stage show off the ground because I couldn't have done it in Tasmania. So they're cross at me that I resigned. But, you know, I often go in and do little fill-ins and things. But I've done so I've got that book.
And I read about another book, this Southern Surveyor.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that about? CSIRO exploration thing, isn't it?
They recently decommissioned marine exploration ship, which is called Southern Surveyor, and that job came out of Hobart as well. That's ready to go as well, so that's going to be released on the 1st of October, and CSIRO making quite a big deal of it, actually. Look, that was just another book where I just went around and interviewed a lot of marine scientists and the history of this lovely old ship they all adored, and which for 20 years plied the oceans around Australia, discovering amazing shit and contributing to our world's knowledge of the oceans, doing a huge amount to discovering about climate change, currents, undersea volcanoes. It did about 100 voyages into not to Antarctica, because it's not an ice rated ship. It's ice capable, but it's not an ice breaker.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's coming here. So that was a wonderful project to do. So I've got two books coming out with two different publishers in the space of a couple of months, which is rather odd.
Well, it sounds like you're in a pretty good place. I think you can just go and do these things that you want to do, and then it's a book.
It's your
interest. It's not like you've got to go to a job that you don't like doing.
Well, true, but, you know, it often sounds a bit more laissez-faire and glamorous than it is. In reality, it's one agonizing...
Oh, I'm not saying it's not hard work, but yeah. But at least it's something you're interested in doing.
True. I'm very fortunate in that I have managed to be able to more or less do the things that I like doing. And I know not everybody has that in life, so I know that I'm very fortunate.
Have you, I was always going to ask you, have you ever done stand-up?
No. I'm not really a comedian, to be honest.
Mm. Well, that's why I said I think of you more of a performance artist as opposed, I mean, yeah, if you haven't done stand-up.
No, I've never done. I have huge admiration for stand-up comics, but I've just never been able to do it. Mm. And it's, you know, not something I feel like I really want to try now. There are too many good ones that I could never emulate, and I don't have the years left to learn the craft. To be honest, but I have never done stand-up. A lot of people think I have.
Yeah, because I never found anything. I never read anything, but I thought I'd ask just in case, because you never know.
I've never done. A lot of people think I have, and this goes to, I'll just tell you one hilarious story relating to what people think that they actually remember. A lot of people think I did stand-up and say, oh, I saw you do stand-up in, you know. And I said, really? Oh, okay. Yeah, well, there you go. Of course, you didn't, because I never did, but there you go.
Remember you doing Sonny from Skippy for 4 years.
Yeah, that's it. So they assume you'd understand. Oh, I saw your show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Did you?
Never actually had one, but oh, I'm glad you saw it. But this is what happens, and how funny people are. In Hobart, Tony Robinson was in town.
Oh, doing, he's the motivation guy?
No, that's Anthony Robbins.
Anthony Robbins. Tony Robbins.
Blackadder. Time.
Yes.
And he was doing one of his history shows about the history of old convict Hobart, and they were filming there. And I said, I'd love to interview him. So the press is being a bit, you know, he's saying no to a lot of stuff. But some reason he said yes to us. So he said, the crew, if you go today, the crew are going to be breaking for lunch, and they're at a very fancy restaurant up in Battery Point, which is the very old, beautiful old, expensive suburb of Hobart. There's a lovely restaurant there called Enverons, and they're having lunch there. If you just wait till he's finished lunch, he'll come out and have a chat to you. So fantastic. So I went up and just waved to him with his crew, and he waved back very fruity. So and pointed to his watch and said, oh, just give me 10 minutes, I'll finish lunch and come and talk to you. So he did. We came outside. We sat on a bench. Now, I had just been given a newfangled recording device, which was like a stick.
Yeah.
Like a stick recorder. It looks like just a cordless mic, but it has a
just
chip.
One of those little digital ones, yeah.
Yeah. And we'd only just got them. So anyway, we sat down on this bench, and there was someone started to mow a lawn. He said, oh, hang on, I'll sort him out. So he said, excuse me, do you mind if we could hear? And he said, shit, it's Blackadder. I could just hear this voice over the fence. Yeah, mate, that's right. Oh, yeah, no worries, sorry. And we had the most wonderful chat about history and television. And we went for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I went back and said, Tony, thank you so much, and went back. And realised I hadn't pressed the right button.
Uh-huh.
Didn't get a thing.
Oh,
didn't
wow.
get a
Nothing.
Thing. So what do I do? What the fuck do I do? And people come and say, oh, I heard it went really well. Yeah, it went right. And I said, look,
Except for that fact.
well, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I said, look, no, just give me a couple of days to put it together and that. And then after a couple of days, people just forgot about it. And then someone said, oh, did you do the Tony Robinson things? Yeah, I went to air. Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah, I must have missed it. And then I occasionally would have people come out to me, mate, heard your Tony Robinson interview. It was brilliant. Oh, thank you. Well done. Really? Yeah, good on you. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
And hilarious. So I quietly got away with that one.
Wow. And one thing, with Up and Slather, I was just watching the last couple episodes, and I was watching for you specifically, and I'm like, you're only in about 7% of the show, and fast forward, it's like 86% of the show.
I know, we don't quite know what's happening with the show at the moment. It's in a bit of a transition phase. I've been diplomatic about it. Look, I think they're still working it out. It's a bit,
but they've committed to 20 shows.
Yes,
I think,
they have. Yeah, they've Foxhill have made a big commitment to it. But we're not quite in it enough for our liking. Look, the first couple of months of Fast Forward were pretty hellish as well. But
it takes time
It takes time, and we got there in the end. So we're just ironing a few little things out.
I'm just surprised it took Foxtel, to bring back sketch comedy. None of the commercial wanted anything to do with it, except Kinney. I noticed Kinney's got a show, but that's about it. There's no sketch comedy
really
on free-to-air TV.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's Foxtel with the money to do it. So
it doesn't involve demolishing your house.
Exactly. It's not reality TV.
Tell it. It's not. No, no. Well, I'm going to have to fly, mate.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for giving me 40-something minutes of your time. It was great.
Thank you, Shane. It's been a lovely chat.
That's all right. But, yeah, this show, it's just like a conversation. There's not, a million questions I've got written down. It's you just talk, it goes where it goes.
Yeah, nice. No, it was lovely chat. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, good luck with everything that's coming up and you two books coming out. Open Slather on Comedy Channel on Foxtel. And you've got the FLAC shows. There's more shows coming. Look up the dates. Find the dates. I'll put them up somewhere.
FLAC.net.au is the best way to find it. But keep an eye on the space where it's not quite up to date, the website at the moment, but it will be soon.
Ah, okay then. And you're on Facebook. I think you put up stuff on Facebook as well. So.
Indeed. I am. Okay. Come and be my friend on Facebook. I need friends. I'm lonely. Shane, will you be my friend, please?
If you'll accept it, yes. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, mate. Lovely to talk to you.
Okay, here's some theme music.